The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
It is the APC podcast once again from acmepackingcompany.com. SB Nation, Vox Media, talking Green Bay Packers all day, every day for you fine folks. The Packers beat the Carolina Panthers 24-16 after a walk-off goal line stop, if that is a thing, sealing the deal and ending the snowy Lambeau affair. So the Packers are now 8-2 at the bye week, the latest bye week the team has had in, I believe, decades. I'll have to check with our statistician, the intern, my dog Sonny, who is currently eating some kind of rubbish from between his toes right next to me. Maybe I'll post that on our Instagram account at the APC Pod on Instagram. Follow the show at the APC Pod on Twitter as well. Subscribe, all that fun stuff. I am Zach Rapport in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And let's talk some Packers. We got the usual cohort here, Alex Patakis, sporting a very fetching Green Bay Packers cap in the video chat. I see you bobbing along there. You got the LaFleur flag at your disposal as well.
I have that. I got the flag, and I'm carrying the G with me wherever I go this week, baby.
That is the that's the quarterback's message to the team as they head out for the bye week. Ben Foldy, a little peek behind the curtain. Moments before we hit record, Ben Foldy, because we have a video chat here, slurped a bit, like put a bowl up to his face, slurped it, and then said, "It's good borscht weather." I don't know if you caught that, Alex. Ben, are you literally eating borscht right now?
I honestly think that all weather is good borscht weather.
Can I just be the voice of maybe like some people listening and say, I don't know what that is? What is that?
This is a very goyish comment, but I will entertain it. Borscht is an Eastern European soup. It's a beet based. And there's different forms of it. You can have just kind of like the summer borscht, traditionally served cold, is mostly just beet juice, essentially. I mean, like with some beets in it. And then the Ukrainian style is a heartier soup. It traditionally has a short rib. And then this borscht actually, a lot of the like rootiness of the broth came from dried mushrooms.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, but it's a great. It's like it's honestly it's a soup for all seasons.
I love beets, so, and they're supposed to be great, especially for males, right? Like reproductive health, it's supposed to be like incredible.
I don't know, but sure. I haven't had any kids yet, but I eat a lot of borscht. I wish I could taste borscht for the first time. It's that kind of thing.
Before we move on, a quick sponsor break. Today's show is brought to you by Borscht. So log on to borscht.com and enter promo code borscht for 15% off of your first ever borscht, if you can prove that you have indeed never had it before.
It's a fun word to say too, borscht.
It is. There's like secret syllables in there.
Honestly, like, look, I hope this like inspires somebody. I don't know. I don't think there's a lot of Jews in Green Bay. I might be wrong about that. But, you know, I don't like it's a perfect tailgate soup. Like hit me with your borscht, Green Bay Packers, Jew and other Eastern European fans.
Oh, man, we're off to a great start. Note nugs. Let's get into note nugs. Preferably not Borscht related. However, we can continue that theme throughout the show. And if, you know, if you want to tie in your favorite Eastern European delicacy, Ben Folda, you are welcome to. Hashtag note nugs. You can tweet at us after every game at the APC pod. And we will share some of your thoughts. But first, let's get our thoughts. And I'll start us rolling today. I tweeted a bit about this during the game, but I wanted to shout out Jamal Williams in this game, who, especially in nasty weather, has really proven himself to be not just like a change of pace back, but a versatile weapon to pair with Aaron Jones. And I know that Aaron Jones is going to get his own accolades for this week after averaging 7.2 yards per carry on 13 carries. And I think all three of the Packers' touchdowns. Great day for him, and he deserves all praise. But I wanted to shout out Jamal Williams because as the game wore on and it was closer really than anyone wanted there in the second half, and as the wet snow sort of began to fall and make it really dicey out there, it was Jamal Williams who helped the Packers eat up like 6 minutes a clock in the third quarter. And I mentioned earlier, I had tweeted about this during the game. We were talking about it, guys, in our text thread. But he ran for 15 yards, then he ran for 10 yards, then he ran for 16 yards, helping the Packers eat the clock there and get into field goal range, going up 24-10. So I don't know. I just, as the offense continues to evolve and as young wide receivers kind of vie for targets from Rodgers, it's such a luxury to have a duo of backs who are as dynamic and kind of complementary as Jones and Williams. And of course with Williams, you know, who we had on the show during his rookie year. So we know he's just an easy guy to root for. He's like sincere and goofy. And yeah, I just wanted to make sure that his effort on Sunday did not go unheralded.
Did you see his viral tweet moment yesterday?
I did. Yeah. When he was, doing the sort of like pre bye week locker room interview, and he sort of checked out mid question.
Yeah, that was beautiful. Really relatable guy, Jamal.
Yeah, totally.
Very
totally.
Happy. Very, you know, I think we can call him a friend of show at this point.
Sure, he has no idea who we are, but he was on our show once.
He would maybe vaguely remember us.
I think so.
He'd stop listening in the middle of the question and then come back and be like, "Who?" And then, but that's okay.
No, we had a good time with him, and I think that he gave some really good answers. If anyone wants to go dig out that interview, it is online for your consumption. But yeah, Ben, to your point, if anyone didn't hear it, all over Twitter, you can find, I think Rob Domofsky might have tweeted it, Wildy, all the usual suspects were tweeting about it, but there's video footage of him being interviewed at his locker, and I forget who's asking the question, but a reporter asks a question, and then this sort of strange look comes over Jamal Williams' face, and he just kind of goes, you know, I got to be honest, I kind of stopped listening halfway through that question, followed by some guffaws from the scrum. I love that kind of stuff. Those are the moments that I really love. Alex, what about you? What do you think of Jamal Williams this season?
Oh, I think he's been outstanding. I mean, the Packers running backs, if they were... The Packers backfield, I think, I was reading about this today, like just their combined numbers is actually like one of the most effective backfields in all of football. And it's amazing that Aaron Jones could be putting up like MVP like numbers almost, not quite MVP like numbers, but there was a comparison with McCaffrey, at least with touchdowns and Williams is, and it's not like they're depriving Williams of the ball. You know, it's like, they finally struck that balance. I also read this chart about like the position groups that different teams are like allocating their targets towards. And I think the Packers were like in the 20s in terms of like running back targets, like 26% of passes or something like that. Some of that's because they don't throw to the tight end as much. But like, that's great. That's modern football. That's using all your weapons. And Jamal Williams definitely allows them to do that. So I've been really, I mean, like, you can't help but be like really pleased with both of these guys. And you feel like, you know, if Aaron Jones gets hurt in the course of a game, which has happened, not like serious injury, but Williams can carry the load the rest of the way. He's more than capable. Yeah. In the passing game, too, that's the thing, is they both do everything, which is what's so awesome. And yeah, and he's super fun.
I mean, also the other thing is that, you know, this is all kind of a corollary nug for the big uglies, right? Like, I mean, I think the offensive line has gotten some a bit of a light shown on it just for some ugly, kind of notable, meaningful penalties, which is kind of new for the Packers. But when you also look at, you know, somebody like Elgton Jennings coming in and being able to, you know, run between the tackles, I think the offensive line has been really good this season.
Totally agree. And I don't want the dropping of the phrase corollary nug to go unnoticed and uncalled out, because that was excellent. Really quickly before we move on, let's give Jamal Williams' stat line. Also had 13 carries like Aaron Jones, 63 yards, 4.8 yards per carry. Not a bad day for basically the second guy in that rotation. Ben, give me your note nug, man.
My note nug is that I continue to be impressed with Alan Lazard, and I consider him to be the number two wide receiver on this team.
It's pronounced Alien Lizard, I believe. I think we decided that.
The Lazard King. Yeah. No, I mean, I was kind of quietly banging the drum for Alan Lazard. I think I don't remember if I was on the record for liking Lazard last season, but I know I have been for most of this season.
Can you quietly bang a drum? I just want to clarify real quick.
Yeah. It's called a pianissimo.
There you go.
I was swishing the brushes. I wasn't banging. I was swishing the brushes. It was like a jazz thing.
There you go. You've been quietly swishing the drum for Lazard all season.
And you know, and honestly, I mean, like he's a, you know, he had that one game with the outstanding, you know, catch. But outside of that, he's had really impressive high leverage, low, you know, they're not going to make it into the ESPN 1 minute highlight reel kind of plays. Right. But he's been able to catch the ball when it's thrown to him in high leverage situations. Sometimes, you know, he's got a beautiful catch point. He, you know, almost came down with that touchdown. I just, you know, he's the real deal. And, I thought he was the real deal coming out of the draft and was kind of surprised when he didn't get picked up. And, I'm glad that the series of happy accidents has brought him to be, I think, you know, Green Bay's number two of the future, probably.
Yeah, high leverage situations and meaningful situations. He's always got seems like two or three catches a game that like it's a critical first down or it's just a moment where they really need a clutch catch. And like you said, it's not a highlight catch, but he comes down with it and moves the chains. All right, Alex, we're not letting you off the hook. Give me your note nug.
All right. So it's albeit not the dankest of nugs this week, because I feel like in many ways I'm talking about the same things every week with this team and watching a very similar game and talking about how the offense played well, but the defense still had to bail them out. But actually just one thing I will say, an area for improvement going into the bye week, and this is not me being critical or anything less than thrilled with an 8-2 record. Through 10 games this season, because I think that they've been phenomenal and they're a legit Super Bowl contender. But the sequence at the end of the half was interesting because I thought it was a very easy opportunity for the Packers to make this not a game. In particular, because of the way that they had success running the football. Like, if they would have executed the double up, which I wanted so bad, because I feel like we never get double ups anymore, and that's always just been an Aaron Rodgers thing that Mike McCarthy killed, and we had a really good opportunity. That was a beautiful drive that just ended in almost comedic fashion. The decision to go for it on the final play of the half instead of kicking the field goal, I think was definitely the right thing to do. And I guess, you know, you could argue call or execution, but all I know is that I was watching this game actually at Tom and Jerry's for the first time, or second game this season. And there was a large group of Packers fans, myself included, who just laughed out loud at how poorly executed that final play was when you have time to prepare for that. Like, I couldn't help but laugh at Jamal Williams as he got tackled in the backfield and had zero prayer of getting the end zone. But, I mean, if they do score there, they made the right call to go for it and they do score, this isn't even really a game. You know, I credit the Panthers. They're a quality opponent. But I still think that they are clearly a tier below the Packers, even though the difference in the game at the end of it was a half a yard or maybe a camera angle that wasn't actually captured. So that's really all I got. But
They did not score on that.
Well, some people think that like that there wasn't a good enough angle to even try to reverse it, but like I don't know. I think people just assumed the ball was higher up, like towards his head. I don't know. Whatever. Yeah, it was not a score. It was a clear stop, I thought. But yeah, areas for improvement, finishing drives, I think, at certain points this season, because they have had a lot of instances where the offense looks so great, and then you like look at the drive chart, and it's like touchdown, punt, 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 and it's like, wait, they feel so effective. And that was certainly one, and Jimmy Graham was a large part of that, so kudos to him, too. Jimmy Graham, who always looks like he's just like anxiously awaiting the next guy to tackle him, even in space. Like, I don't understand why he's so scared to be hit.
He's big and old.
Yeah, I guess, but you're big. Like, I mean, you can... Being old is one thing, but when you're big and you're running at like a full head of steam downfield, like, what do you think is going to happen, man? Whatever. He played well. Good job, Jimmy.
Whatever. He played well. with that, we'll transition into some listener note nugs, because some of these are relevant, Alex, to what you just got through saying. Hashtag note nugs again on Twitter after every game. You guys can let us know how you feel, what you thought was notable. Nick Varley, I should say, last year's podcast pick'em winner, Nick Varley, official title now. He writes in, the offensive play calling in short yardage situations was McCarthy-esque. Hashtag note nugs. Matt LaFleur was asked several times over the course of the last few days about specifically that play call at the end of the half, which I also agree was like, it wasn't funny, but I laughed, you know, when he got tackled in the backfield. It's like, ha, why did they do that? And I will say that, to LaFleur's credit, I think he recognized pretty quickly, he recognized in the post-game interview and then reiterated it again yesterday in his press availability, that he stands by going for the touchdown, but he would just have a different play dialed up. That particular play was really not for that circumstance. It was a bad play call, and that's something that I think that we've seen with LaFleur over the course of this year. There are some instances where he's kind of still learning on his feet a little bit. I think that his scripted plays, the beginnings of games, are usually pretty successful, pretty fluid, and then there are those moments throughout the games where there's stopping and starting, sometimes mostly stopping. But there are a number of instances I think we can point to throughout the season of just like, that's just a young coach made the wrong decision. But
yeah.
I don't know, Alex. I credit him with acknowledging that.
Yeah, totally. I mean, the decision to go for it is great, and I'm glad that he's aware that he, you know, probably could have made a better call. In that situation, you're going for it because you're confident in Aaron Rodgers, then just give him an at bat, you know, like just go down with him rather than barely even being able to hand the ball off to Jamal Williams.
Or anyway, a different running play, something outside. I don't know. You know, there's a lot of options there. It doesn't have to be a pass instead of a run, but that particular play was just like doomed from the start, quite obviously.
Yeah. And the Packers are really effective running when they spread people out. Like, even if they ran, you know, kind of like the Panthers did at the end of the game. Like, even something like that would be slightly more understandable. But anyway, whatever. Play call guy, a win's a win.
There was a big whiffed block, too. I mean, it's not like that play went off without a hitch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there was a real, like, McCarthy deja vu moment for me when the Packers tried to get Carolina to jump off sides on fourth down and then took a delay of game penalty. I mean, not like an unnecessary delay of game penalty, but... I mean, it just brought me back to years of watching Mike McCarthy try to do that in various situations and being completely unable to remember a single time in which it worked. And I don't know if you guys can remember a time where literally ever, anybody like jumped off sides on a fourth down against the Packers, but it felt good.
Yeah, I was actually going to tee up this next note nug that comes on Twitter from Evan, who says, why be aggressive and go for the touchdown at the end of the half but not go for it on fourth down and ice the game to save 20 yards? Sort of on this similar note of play calling oddities, sort of the going for it on fourth but just taking the delay of game and having no intention of actually going for it, Foldy. You and I think, disagree. We didn't disagree, but maybe we had a little bit of a failure to communicate on text as we were discussing our feelings about that. I think we both agree that we have a relative dislike of that as a strategy, quote unquote.
I totally get it. Like, I mean, yeah. Look, if you know you're going to punt 5 yards from whatever, like the 44 isn't going to make a big difference, right? In fact, you're probably making your punter's life a little bit easier to try to angle it out. But, you know, I think in retrospect, in a game that they lost or they won by a yard, right? Presumably, like, let's assume the worst and a 2-point conversion. You know, that field position is going to matter. But I would have been in favor for them going for it. Like, I would not have criticized them for that decision just because I think the numbers show generally that going for it on fourth and short in high leverage situations is better usually. But yeah, I mean, to me, that's like a neutral play. Like, I don't feel they made a mistake. I don't feel that, you know, I feel more, it's not something I feel particularly strongly about from a play calling perspective. I just felt very nostalgic for Mike McCarthy watching, you know, this kind of anticlimactic attempt to drive, to pull a guy off sides. And I literally cannot remember a single time in which that's worked.
Yeah, no, I don't think it ever has. I don't know. Prove us wrong.
It's also possible, I guess. I'm trying to remember. It might have bled some time off the clock. I can't remember if the clock was running, but
I don't recall either. Let's move on. Louis tweeting in his hashtag #NoteNug. Rodgers was good, not great. I hated that last offensive drive. I love the Smiths. Even with the penalties. Gotta listen to the Smiths when we can. 8-2, baby. Hashtag note nugs. Thanks, Lily, for sending that in. He says, I hated the last offensive drive. I think, yeah, not the best way to end that game. The last two offensive drives ending in punts. And here's a note nug coming in from Chris on Twitter. He says, hashtag note nugs. What happens when Kyle Allen is a top 10 quarterback? And I was trying to figure out if he meant that he thinks Kyle Allen is soon to be a top 10 quarterback or if he thinks, hey, this guy is a backup and the Packers almost lost to him and the sky is falling and blah, blah, blah. Because that's the angle that I want to take with this, Chris. And I'm sorry if I'm misinterpreting your question, but I've seen that there's always that contingent of Packers fans, the negative ones, who after every game, even when it's a win, and there have been 8 of them so far this year, have to find the thing that just chafes them, the little negative thing to glom onto and focus on because, I don't know, they have no joy or happiness in their lives. I don't know. But Kyle Allen, Alex, I'm interested what you think. Backup quarterback almost kind of in name only. I feel like he's better than some starters right now.
Yeah, I mean, he's only had 2 bad games. They came against the 49ers, who are, what, 8-1 now? Or 9? Yeah. And the Packers, who are 8-2. So, I mean, he's clearly proven that he's a serviceable quarterback. And I don't know, actually, because I don't remember reading when they shut Cam Newton down, if he needed to be shut down for the season or if that was a decision because, you know, they're not in as desperate a situation because Kyle Allen has actually played better and led them to a winning streak. In terms of the way that he played against the Packers, I will say this, like his numbers, they look pretty decent. He definitely racked up yards by throwing to DJ Moore on the perimeter against Kevin King, who, even though he allowed all those yards, I still felt made a couple of plays in this game and played pretty well. I also wonder if footing was an issue because it felt like almost every catch of DJ Moore's was like a comeback route or a curl route where Kevin King just like was late to get back. Yeah. And also Greg Olsen tore him up for like, almost 100 yards. I think he had 98 yards. And you could say what you want about the Packers defense. Like, you knew that Greg Olsen was, well, first off, like Greg Olsen and Christian McCaffrey are just guys who are going to tear the Packers apart for the last decade. So you could argue with like the defensive scheme, but it's not like the Packers made him look like a superstar. He also should have had 3 interceptions. He only had 1 because the Packers dropped a couple of interceptions. There was the Jair Alexander. That's a tough play to make, but that would have been a game-sealing interception, and that would have been a second one. And I think Adrian Amos had another one that he should have intercepted, right? The one that didn't turn into an interception from Tremont Williams, unless I'm making that up.
No, I think that's right.
Yeah, so really, he probably should have had a 3-interception game against and was sacked 3 times and pressured, especially late in the game when the game was on the line, pressured enough to where you felt like the Packers might get away with it, even though, again, it came down to a half a yard. But yeah. At no point did I feel like, wow, the Packers defense is playing so poorly and making a scrub look like a star. Like, he's a good quarterback who doesn't make a lot of mistakes and almost made more mistakes than he has in any other game against this Packers team. But the wind was swirling and it was snowing and guys didn't catch the ball.
Yeah. He's a good enough quarterback, and Ron Rivera as well, I think, is pretty underrated as a coach.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the Panthers are a good team. You know, like, that's the other part of it. Like, the supporting cast around him isn't exactly terrible. So yeah. I'm cool with it.
Same. Let's breeze through a few more note nugs and wrap up this segment here. Glenn tweets in hashtag note nugs, all bend, no effing break.
Yeah.
I'm big on that one. I like that. Got a tweet in from, and I am going to butcher this, Helutha Demaha on Twitter. I think that's how you say that. But he says, I told my family, here comes the victory flakes when it started to snow. And I think that's a thing now. Hashtag victory flakes. Anytime it snows, we're calling it. That's a thing now. One last note nug, and then we will move on. Jeff tweets in hashtag note nugs, lack of defending the crossing routes will be the death of us. I see you smirking, Alex. Is that going to be the death of us? It seems like it's...
No, I mean, I don't know. Like, what can you do, I guess? You know what? If someone kills that,
what
with,
can you do?
Kills us with that.
You have someone there to cover that space. I don't know. I tweeted a few times about the vacancy sign that's flashing there in the middle of the field.
That's one option.
Abraham Campbell had a good game, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true.
Kill him right back with the crossing routes. We'll have a coach who will finally call some. So that's my counter to that.
Yeah. Speaking of Ibrahim Campbell, let's move on from note nugs, and we'll take some questions here from you guys. So we'll move on to a little mailbag segment. We'll play the annoying sounders. Everyone will bob their head on the video chat.
You've got mail.
And we will cut out the sounders so we don't get sued. Ben Saylor tweets in, since Raven Green went down, I've felt that the lack of starting caliber hybrid safety / linebacker might have pulled the linchpin out of the defense, leading to a drop-off after week 3. How much did getting Ibrahim Campbell back appear to help on that front this last Sunday? I don't know how closely you guys were paying attention to him, but I think it was really, really telling. I think it was really, really telling that Oren Burks got a few snaps in the beginning of the game, and then in many packages, it felt like he was quickly replaced by Ibrahim Campbell, who I think, did he have a forced fumble later
in
the game?
He did, off
of
McCaffrey.
Him?
I don't think they recovered it, though, right?
Yes, I think that's right. You know, Campbell is a guy who, he might be just a guy, but he's a guy that Pettine clearly trusts a lot. And I've heard some say that people are saying that if Campbell was healthy to start the season, he would have been the choice over Green. And I think that there's a case for that. So Ben, to answer your question, how much did getting Ibrahim Campbell back appear to help last Sunday? I think it was a big help, and I think we'll look for further improvement here in the coming weeks. Speaking of the coming weeks, we have a question in from David who says, will their game against the 49ers determine the number one seed after week 17? That's an interesting question, Alex, with the 49ers finally losing last night and as we record this, in an overtime thriller to the Seahawks. I don't know if either of you guys actually watched that overtime. I got a chance to, but
so envious of your time zone, by the way. Don't act like that's not a big factor in you seeing that whole game.
10:30 at night, just laying in bed watching TV, and then on my phone I'm able to, hey, check out this last overtime couple series. Pretty I don't mean to brag, but it's pretty awesome.
So I would say, like, you know, it definitely is going to play a huge factor. And then I thought, well, okay, I feel like the Niners are probably going to lose a couple more games. So maybe it really comes down to the Saints, but the Saints and Niners play each other also in a couple of weeks. So in reality, the number one seed in the NFC is just going to be decided, by these teams and their records against each other. And I feel like because the Niners have the Packers and the Saints, I would give the edge to the Packers there, but I feel like the Saints are still going to be the number one seed in the NFC. Maybe I'm crazy, because to expect the Packers to sweep the division, I feel like is a little bit unrealistic. I think they'll win the division, but at Minnesota, like 2 days before Christmas, is really hard. And you know, they could lose to the Bears, I guess, maybe. I really don't think so, but like they would just have to like only kick field goals somehow.
Only kick two field goals.
So I mean, obviously it's huge. You know, it's like it's really freaking huge, but I look at the Saints as a more likely team to win the NFC than the Niners. I would go like Saints, Packers, then Niners. I just don't trust San Francisco.
I think if you look at the rest of the schedule for both of those teams, if the Packers win, I really do think they're in pole position. You know, it's theirs to lose. Just because I think, you know, the 49ers have, you know, they'll have a game against the Cardinals this week, then the Packers, but then they face Ravens, Saints, Falcons, who probably aren't as much of a threat as they looked like the other night. Yeah, they have the Ravens too.
Yeah,
and then they finish it with the Rams and the Seahawks. You know, the Rams are kind of I wouldn't say garbage, but by like Rams standards of the last couple of years, they're kind of garbage. But you know, Seahawks, that's not a gimme. Like none of the I think compare that to the Packers, who face, you know, the Giants, the Washington football team, and then, you know, three and out against the division. The Bears are probably going to be done by then and playing hard, but done.
Well, I guess the Saints do have more losable games than the Packers too. So I guess I have to agree with Ben's rankings. And
I'll allow it.
Yeah. I mean, I think if the Packers beat the Niners, which I'm not saying is a given by any means. But I do think that they kind of set their own destiny a little bit.
Yeah, the Saints have some respectable opponents that I guess you wouldn't expect, like the Colts and Titans, and they play the Panthers twice. I feel like the Packers could beat the Niners, lose to the Vikings. I feel like the Packers could go 12-4 and still have a chance at the number one seed. 13-3, I guess, is what you're really shooting for. But
and that's also, I mean, that goes along with kind of what I've been saying all season, which is that the creme de la creme of the league this year is, first, for one thing, in the AFC for the most part. just in that the Patriots have, you know, a historic defense, and granted one that mostly plays garbage teams.
Yeah. And the Ravens have what feels like almost an unstoppable offense now.
Yeah, the Ravens are fantastic. I love watching them.
Yeah, if the Packers can't win the Super Bowl, the only thing I want to happen in the NFL is Lamar Jackson to win the Super Bowl.
It does scare you a bit to think about how good the Colts could have been if Andrew Luck hadn't retired. And the Chiefs, I think, will be, you know, they're incredibly well-balanced and the offense is explosive. And that's not to say that the NFC is going to be like a cakewalk in the playoffs. I don't think it will be. I think that all of the NFC teams are going to be good, right? Like the Vikings are actually a good football team. Saints are a good football team. Niners are a good football team. Also with a pretty near historic defense.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't think it's a gimme, but I do think that the Packers are right in there at the kind of top end of, at least in the NFC for sure, in the top tier.
And it's so important because the difference between, like, you know, the first round bye is having, like, if you don't get a first round bye, you're probably going to have to host either the Niners or the Seahawks, and that's, like, an imminently losable game for any team in the conference, you know? Yeah. Or the other team you would have to host is, like, I guess maybe Minnesota, if they don't end up winning the NFC North. Like the wild card teams in the NFC are great. Like the top of the AFC is awesome, but like the middle of the NFC is all quality teams.
Yep.
There's not really like a lot of bad ones. Like no bad team in the NFC is going to make the playoffs this year. There's probably going to be like a 10-6, 11-5 team that doesn't, which is scary, but it's also great because the Packers are 8-2. So
I would love to see the Seahawks in the playoffs
they need to make it for entertainment,
for
value.
Fun's sake. Yeah.
You may regret saying those words. Let's move on and round out our Q&A session here with, you know, we were talking a little math and how things might play out. Let's go the philosophy route as Prince Robot the Fourth, great handle, by the way, writes in. and Ben, I want to send this one to you. There's a subset of Green Bay Packers fans that can't stop complaining about wins. When will these anal warts, I would not put it that way, when Whoa. Will these, when will these people shut up and enjoy the season? Sheesh. Ben Foldy, why do these people exist? What is it about the human condition, if we can wax philosophical, that makes a certain, creates a certain subset of Green Bay Packers fans who are never happy, even when the team is 8-2 heading into their bye week?
So this is not going to be a popular opinion, but losing in sports is the real emotional, like for me, the real emotional core of being a sports fan is losing. I have way, way, way more sense memories of the Seahawks NFC championship game than I do of the Super Bowl victory over the Steelers. Like, to me, that was the peak sporting experience. I love to complain. I love to kvetch.
You love to eat borscht on a cold winter's day.
I do think that the Packers have a particularly, as a fan base, have a real sense of, and the thing that separates the Packers fan base from, you know, whatever, take some other fan base, the entitlement towards winning is strong. And for me, that seems to preclude the enjoyment of the losses for many of those people. I love a brutal loss. It feels terrible, but like that's when I feel the most like alive as a sports fan these days. I don't know what that says about me, but maybe with in the absence of brutal losses that remind you of the futility of your own life and why you choose to do these things, you know, maybe with these wins, you know, you're just looking for futile wins. I don't know.
This is why I teed this question up for you, Ben, because, man, that's an amazing answer.
I don't think I actually said anything, but I do think that, you know, if you read like Nick Hornby's Fever Pitch.
Oh, yeah. I just read that.
Possibly the best book written about sports.
So
ever.
Good. So good.
And so much of it is about losing and like having your expectations dashed over and over and over again. And then also the heightened effect of the victory in that frame of mind. And I think Packers fans have been you know, and on one hand, blessed to avoid that kind of futility for years, but, you know.
On the other hand, cursed to never experience the loss. I don't know.
I do agree, though, because, like, there's one thing that the Rodgers era has been full of, and that's gut-wrenching losses. And, like, when we look back on his career, I think that those are going to be just as memorable, if not more memorable, like you said, than the win over the Steelers in the Super Bowl, because, like,
I almost remember none of that game, but I remember like the Cardinals, like Hail Mary apocalypse. I remember like the NFC, like I can tell you where I was. I can tell you where I was for the Super Bowl too, but like,
I mean, he's
in all
lost
honesty,
in
like,
walk-off fashion multiple times. That is gut-wrenching, even though we know he's like one of the greatest, like that's a huge part of his whole like.
And speaking of Aaron Rodgers, I mean, he said recently in an interview, in like a press conference that, that the thing that really drives him, he's a very, very competitive person. He's talking about himself. He's a very, very competitive person, and he is driven by the thrill of winning, but he is driven more by how much he just hates to lose. And that is true of everything, football and chess and
I've heard like
games.
Ping pong. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, losing sucks. But if you're a fan, like savor it. Like it has nothing to do with you. Like enjoy it. Enjoy that like look into your own soul.
Enjoy every sandwich, as Warren Zevon says, even the even the not so good ones. I think that's the perfect time to hit the polka. A little philosophy chat to round out our pre-bye week show as the Packers head into their vacation or staycation week, whatever they're doing, carrying that G with them wherever they go. 8-2 is their record. As Alex points to the G on his hat, I see you. Yeah, Packers got the week off. I don't know what you guys are doing with your weekend, but I am not watching football personally. That's kind of how I like to celebrate the bye week, is to give myself a reprieve from the weird enjoyment I get from watching grown men smash their heads against each other. Give myself a little break from that. We'll be back. I guess we never talked about this, but I think we should do a show next week. If you guys can't, we'll figure something out. What do you think?
I'm going to be in Washington, D.C. for a lot of next week. But I could potentially... I honestly shouldn't commit to anything.
Ben's out. Alex, are you in live on the air?
I'm calling you out. We'll do a
show.
We'll do a show. We can talk soup. We can talk whatever you want. Sandwiches.
Well, Ben won't be here, but we can talk our own soup. Our own soup experiences. All right, so we'll do a show next week. Everybody enjoy the week off, however you choose to celebrate that. Refamiliarize yourself with your family, your loved ones, your pets, you know, that sort of thing. Follow the show at the APC Pod on Twitter, at Alex Patakis, at Ben Foldy, at Zach Rapport. Subscribe, give us a rating on iTunes. We've gotten a few more. They're very much appreciated, and they lift our spirits and they help our show reach more people. So until next time, enjoy your weekend, folks, and go Pack, go. 8-2.